Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking biodiversity and talking of creatures and crawlies and creepy crawlies and all the rest of it. Go on, Martin, it was the obvious one. Go on.
Yeah. What's creepy or crawly about me?
I do recall a tweet where they said you do leave a trail of silvery slime behind you when you walk. But
that's because I'm a silver fox, Tony, that's all.
We won't get into it now, you know. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined by Science Officer of the Herp Society Ireland, Zoology Researcher Associate at Trinity College, and host of the Critter Shed podcast, Collie Ennis. Collie, thank you so much for coming over to the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was telling you downstairs that we had we reach out to people all the time, try to get them in, and we were talking then to someone who had said, "Oh, you have to speak to Collie," and then all of a sudden everybody had to speak to Collie because of a disaster that took place. Is it fair to call it? What did you call it, Martin? Vandalism?
Vandalism, it is. It's vandalism. That's what it is.
The Tallow Wetlands scenario. You might just give listeners who aren't that familiar with it an idea of what actually happened and, you know, how over what period of time this disaster has played out.
Yeah, so it's just over a week, I think, since it happened. And basically, we had been working with South Dublin County Council to improve wetlands in the areas for amphibians, which is what the Herpetological Society is, you know, interested in doing. Our native ones, especially like our frogs and newts. So we had been approached by the heritage officer in the council, who's absolutely brilliant, top notch. And we had started work, so we did a couple of ponds in. I had come across the wetlands while surveying where to put ponds in and what would be, you know, a place that there could potentially be some frogs, because there's no point in putting a pond in a car park. No frogs are going to show up. So, yeah, while I was out looking for these places, I came across a ready-made wetlands in Tallaght that had quite miraculously appeared over 10 years or so from just being neglected and left alone. And it was crawling with amphibians. You had a big major pond right beside a swampy area with lots of connected smaller ponds. And it just kept this variety of habitats with, you know, grassy areas, scrub brush, all this kind of stuff. Perfect. So I reported that back to my contacts in the council, and they were very enthusiastic about the kind of, the general idea was to protect the area, stick in a couple of boardwalks, have a litter pick, and then just, it was only aesthetics, but the habitat was there. And as far as we were concerned, that was going forward, because in the proposals moving into 2026 for the Tallaght area, because they're actually starting to plant stuff in Tallaght now as opposed to just throw anything everywhere. It was listed in the proposals on number 8 as a constructed wetlands. And by constructed wetlands, I'm assuming they were talking about the few boardwalks and stuff that I had proposed, you know. So we thought everything was hunky-dory and kind of a little victory. That one's in the bag. And then, as I said last week, I went up just to do a little survey to see if there was many freshly metamorphed newts and frogs moving out of the water in the small ponds, and the place had been completely flattened and silt poured over and then just steamrolled and flattened. So heavy machinery tracks. The habitat was 80 to 90% gone, and it was just like a punch in the stomach, and I kind of threw my hands up in the air. First of all, I thought I was drunk or something, or I'd been drinking. I was like, was I out last night? Am I in the wrong place? Am I hallucinating? Genuinely, that's the God's honest truth. And then it was just a case of, I throw my hands in the air and go, listen, feck it, I don't care. What can you do? You just want to give up. And then I kind of walked a little bit further and I started getting really angry. So I decided then, I said, look, it's happening too much in this country. It's happening from forest to stream, river, mountains, everything. And it's always the same story. It's always laziness, greed, incompetence. And it's just our general attitude on local government level towards our habitats, our environment, is absolutely disgraceful. And what's more disgraceful nowadays is the hypocrisy of coming out with biodiversity plans, action plans, climate change, this, that, and the other. You know, every scientist and conservationist in the country will tell you the same thing. Yes, there's lots of plans made and lots of, you know, great ideas, but nothing is implemented. Nothing is implemented.
World well, class at making plans.
Well, I tell you the one thing that is implemented, and it's a little, digress a little, is fucking thicket spruce everywhere. I mean, it's the only thing that's implemented is thicket spruce, and it is, you know, it's
monoculture. It's monoculture. It's toxic to the ground.
It's Norwegian weed is what it is. Yeah,
exactly. It doesn't support anything. And I tell you why that's implemented, because there's big money in
it. Yeah, huge, huge. But what bothered me was that the Taoiseach put this out as climate action. To plant thicket spruce is climate action. It's the exact opposite of climate action.
Mm-hmm. Draining carbon sinks like bogs and wetlands to plant spruce. Yeah. And you know, the opposite of biodiversity. Monoculture is the opposite of biodiversity. It's like people, I keep...
Just for listeners' benefits, what we're talking about here is the announcement that they were going to plant, was it 35 million trees?
Yeah, a couple of million or something.
Yeah, and within that, though, it was like 70% that this was to be, as you said, thicket spruce, which is literally monoculture and the opposite. It's a cash crop in many ways. And you only have to venture into the Dublin Mountains, not too far from around Tree Rock and all the rest of it, and you can see the damage.
Yeah. And if you are, like, to explain monoculture as well, monoculture is basically just a one crop system. Mm. It's like a field of barley, a green lawn, or a plantation of one kind of tree. There's nothing living there bar that thing. Mm. So it's, you know, it supports very little biodiversity. Mm. So it's very much a one creature or plant system, and that's what's going down. You know,
I was lucky enough this last week. I was in an actual forest, you know, different kinds of trees, and I was able to pick up walnuts, chestnuts. I couldn't get over acorns, hazelnuts, and I was like, "These are just lying on the ground." This is true. Up at Malahide Castle, you go up there and you walk around, and you know they're forested areas up there,
and
you see you see real biodiversity. You walk through, you go off the paths, and you walk through, and the stuff actually growing up between the trees. You go up the Dublin Mountains, and it's a carpet of pine needles through the trees. There's nothing else there. But I'm going to bring you back to the wetlands. How long had you been working on the wetlands?
Just over a year. So, you know, the process had been just over a year. But in that process, you know, while we're doing other stuff, and we have a few different things that we're doing around the place as a society. While I was up there, it was very much my project out of the society on my own because I live close to it and it's kind of very close to my heart. But I'm up there once or twice a month throughout the year then, just taking notes, and you're spending a half a day there just to make sure you see everything, and you get attached to a place, believe it or not, you know. And then I was bringing up ecologists and friends who were, you know, scientists as well, and bringing them into it and just going, have a look at this. And one of them even commented, like, once you got into the middle of the kind of swampy area, you could have been anywhere because it was crawling with all sorts of different things that you would never ever see in Tala.
It is funny,
you know?
Though, because I've seen recently where, you know, isn't it now on Bull Island where there's a lizard population.
We're working on that. That's our thing. So
yeah, absolutely. And my point is, like, we don't understand in Ireland that this stuff is we there's this, you know, St. Patrick got rid of all the snakes, therefore but this is you know, that narrative is very prevalent, like it really is. But we have got.
I can't remember ever seeing a newt in Ireland. I can't remember ever seeing one.
You see, the thing about these creatures that we, and that's kind of part of the reason we try and promote them as much as we can in society, is because first of all they're very cryptic, which means they're very hard to spot. Even frogs and you know, I mean, the more common stuff is becoming less common, and we're kind of even starting to call common frogs, inverted commas, we're starting to call them grass frogs, is what they're called on the continent. Mm. Because there's a kind of a when you say common, people assume that they're everywhere. Yeah. And they're dropping in numbers big time everywhere. You know, their numbers are decreasing. And sometimes, and especially in urban areas, rapidly decreasing. I think it's one of the things we use to kind of get it through to older generations, like our age and beyond. It's like, have you ever seen your kid with tadpoles?
Go down the, you know? Where the Lewis comes through Cabra now.
Yeah.
And that used to be Frog Central.
Yeah.
Now it's a concrete jungle.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not being smart. We'll talk about in lieu of progress and whatever way you want to. But that was where, as you said, where there was tadpoles, where there was frogs, where there were newts. Martin, you talk about those things. They were common in all along that area. And it wasn't man made as such. It was an old defunct railway line between Constitution Hill, basically, effectively, and back. And for a couple of kilometres, it just became wild.
Yeah.
And we lose those spots in because of for progress, we'd say, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, like, come here, look. People need houses.
Mm.
We need to, you know, I mean, we'll need to be building houses and moving further out to seas or build up. A lot of agricultural land isn't great for wildlife or biodiversity anyway, because it's pumped full of chemicals. And, yeah. And so, I mean, like, even putting a housing estate on those type of places, you can plan for nature. Mm. You can have your pond in the middle of it. You can have your man-made wetland. And like, all these creatures can live very, very happily. You want to see my garden? It's like, it's tiny. It's a postage stamp, but it is crawling with life because I provided a habitat and they show up. It's as simple as that. And you can do that on a larger scale in housing estates instead of these wasteful green fields of nothing. Put trees in, put ponds in, give people a chance to get out. And imagine the mental health. You're not going to have burnt out cars in the middle of a forest.
No, you're not.
You're not. You're going to have... Lads can go up and climb trees and do whatever they want. You know what I mean? But it's you're closer to nature. It makes things... It helps your head as well as everything on a purely selfish scale. You know what I mean?
Well, and we had Luke Neal from the Shropshire Wildlife Trust here, and he spoke about, you know, the rewilding and the how they use natural flood defences.
Yes,
and so they talked about carbon capture. They talked about how they just using the native woods and trees and increasing that nature came back very quickly. It bounced back very quickly, and more to your point. That in terms of the advantages for people's mental health in the area, there was more cycling, there was more hiking, there was more trekking, there was more. And this is better, you know, obviously that stuff is better for your physical well-being, but it was also better for whereby people felt more involved in the area.
Yeah.
And those things, that stuff matters now. If you're talking about houses are one thing, but like I often go back to what O'Coolan say, the cooperative, they're on their website, it says, not building houses, building communities.
Yeah,
and as part of communities, you need
that, and that's it. And I mean, like, you see the movements now that have happened, like, since this incident last week. I've been inundated with emails and text messages and social media messages from people all over the country saying, "Hiya, we saw you on the news, blah blah, can you highlight this issue, can you highlight this issue here?" And you know, and I really feel for these people because they genuinely care about their local bog, their local woods that's getting flattened. And the problem is, though, I haven't been down there doing research in it, so I'd be only kind of weighing in to try and I wouldn't know as much information. I know what was going down in Talla, and that's what made me so angry. I know exactly, and I have everything to prove it. So it was kind of difficult. But I am kind of, I've never been an activist. I'm a digger. I like digging ponds. I like getting my hands dirty and doing the conservation work and the science and things. But I'm seriously going to make more of an effort now to kind of speak up, because I think we need to start speaking up more. Well, like, it's very frustrating, it is, you know.
Talla, you and I both know that a lot of Talla was put up without any thought to the environment that the people were going to be living in.
Yep.
Talla, when it changed from village to pretty big town, it was the promise of jobs, and the jobs were going to be located in Talla, and they were just going to build houses next to the jobs. And the jobs never arrived, but they built vast, vast amounts of estates with these huge open green areas at the foot of mountains. And the wind just whips down off those mountains across those green areas and makes them completely unusable for people. On a good summer's day, you might use a green in Talla. 364 days a year, they're no use to anybody. No use to anybody. And it gives the appearance of being green, but it's not green at all. So how did the wetlands survive in Tala? Or how did the wetlands come about in Tala?
So, yeah, so it was a dumping spot for silt, ironically, many years ago. And they hadn't dredged ponds in a while, obviously. Mm. And it had just been left settle and degraded, the silt settled into the ground. And then, as nature does, it bounced back. Mm. It was colonized. It was occupied by plants. A mad thing that had happened was because they had dumped silt there from, I think, a few ponds around the city, there were seed banks in the silt of plants from everywhere. So even on a botanical level, it was mental because you were just like, I was like, how is that here? Mm. You'd have like daffodils beside, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Aquatic plants. And they were just all kind of, it was just a real hodgepodge, but very interesting and attracted all sorts of creatures. And the plan was then to, I was doing this initial kind of general survey just to spot things and get it signed, sealed and delivered that would be protected. And this spring, we were going to go down with my colleagues from Trinity College Natural Sciences. So that's botany, the invertebrates, myself doing the amphibians, and just go right through it. Even mammals we were going to put out traps for. Go right through it with a fine-tooth comb, and it'd be amazing to say, look, people of Tala, this is what you have on your doorstep. Yeah. Nature is using this as part of the green corridor from the mountains right down to the parks.
Well, you would think the county councils across Dublin created an accidental wetlands. Yeah. They were accidental environmentalists.
By leaving things alone.
Yeah, exactly. And then to confound that by being deliberate vandals on top of it is awful. It's just, well, you know, if you've done something good by accident, you think you're going to protect it. Yeah. You can think you're going to keep an eye on it, you know?
Well, the thing about it is, and the key word there would be deliberate. I don't think there was a malicious intent or deliberate, you know, destruction of it. I do think that there's a severe lack of communication and respect between the people who are trying to make our county councils more biodiverse, helping nature out. And then the other side, who are mainly the engineering side of things, who just want to have straight lines and neat lawns and as little trees to trim as possible. So you have this kind of, this right hand and left hand.
Plus there was a thing of, sure, this is what we've always
we've
done.
Always now, and there you're hitting a really important point. This is how we've always done it. Mm. Burning the header up the mountains. Yeah. This is how we've always done it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way they drain rivers, the environmentally destructive practice everywhere throughout this country. We've always done it this way. We have to stop that. Mm. We have to stop that attitude. Where was the environmental impact assessment? Who was the ecologist on site? If you're working next, even if they say, right, well, it was always a dumping ground. Okay. You're right beside a lake and an amphibian breeding grounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, they dumped it on it. But it's like, where was the ecologist on site with the clipboard and the top hat? You know, it drives
why
me
was
mad.
Tala picked?
Hang on, Martin.
And this is it. Here's one more point, because if I forget about this, this is what grates me. Aside from me being a nutbar who's, you know what I mean, loves frogs so much that he caused a national furor, but aside from that, just say Renle, rat mines, Fox Rock, and their ponds are full of silt, and they go, Mr. Councilman, will you come down and take them out? Certainly, madam. Gets the truck, fills it up with the silt, drives it promptly onto one of their greens and dumps it there to be left.
Yeah.
What in the name of God would happen?
To be
mortar. It's a total disrespect for a working class area. It's a big F you. This is how we've always done it.
And it's how they have always done it, particularly
could
to Tala.
Could we not tie yellow ribbons around? I'm sorry, no. I know we're joking, but it's not.
No.
It doesn't need
but
to be.
But there is a socio-economic factor to this. You wouldn't 100%. Get away with it in Terenure. You wouldn't get away with it in rat mines, but you'll get away with it in Tala.
Yeah. Because that's just the way we've always done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The in terms of, so in the wider picture, and I want to broaden it just from the Tala wetlands, we need to start thinking in terms of obviously increasing biodiversity, giving nature a chance to bounce back, as you said, and also for the economists or the bean counters in terms of climate mitigation and carbon capture.
Yeah.
These areas actually play their part in that. I'm right in saying that.
100%. And I mean, like, that's why it's so frustrating, because it was already doing that as a system. Mm. It was, you know, wetlands capture more, what was it? I think it's 5 or 6 times more ponds and wetlands capture more than trees faster. So you stick one in the ground and it starts sucking immediately nearly carbon out of the air, because that's just a live system like that will do it.
It needs to.
On a national scale, we just need to completely rethink the way we deal with the environment. It has to be a complete rethink, a change in attitude. We need young ecologists, you know what I mean, in there, in these departments, with some clout. Mm. And to be able to tell people, listen, sorry, I don't care if that's the way you used to do it. Mm. We're not doing it like anymore.
Yeah, and just to say, just hedgerows ain't going to do it.
Yeah, no. I mean,
this is the plan.
We have to start protecting our hedgerows for starters. Yeah, we don't even do that well. We do. Everything is just like flattening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is a conflict with the farmers, whereas if the farmers were properly compensated and told, you know what I mean? Not told, but asked, a lot of them will come on board. Like, we've seen a lot of really good systems being restored by local farmers all over the country, but it's because they're passionate about it as well. If you incentivize that with some kind of compensation, even to give up a portion of your land as a wetland instead of draining.
I'll put it to you this way. Every other year you'll drive down the M4 or whatever it is, and you'll see yellow fields with the flax.
Yeah.
This thing. But they rotate the crops, and sometimes in a fallow year they put these things up, and you're going, so that's incentivized. You can do that with hedgerows. You can do that with these things and say, well, actually what you're doing right now is a carbon capture, or it's actually helping our insect population, which is, you know, being crashing, devastated by, you know, we talk about this globally. And yet we're very lucky in Ireland that we still have a climate that is still within that temperate area. You know, we're not going to the arid desert, but people, I spoke to John Gibbons recently, and he said that you could almost draw a line across parts of Europe and say, this will no longer be arable. Yeah. You know,
the degradation of our soil alone. Hmm. Just from intensive agriculture, we have to it's frustrating, because the environment has become politicized now as well. This is another thing that's a nightmare, because now you have people who would be more leaning right wing will just scream bloody murder when you mention anything about climate change, or they want to scream at it.
It's a trope now. It's a right wing, you know. Yeah, you have to be pro-life. You have to be pro-Trump, and you have to be anti-environmentalist. And if you don't tick the boxes, you're not fully over there, you know.
And it's ridiculous, because, I don't know, your environment is your life support system.
Yeah.
And it's not a political joke or something to be kicked around lightly. It's not.
Well,
I don't care what your politics is. Science doesn't care. The facts are the facts are the facts. And you can try and, you know what I mean, deny all you want, but there is no massive conspiracy. I'm not paid or a shill for anybody. I have to work two jobs to kind of make ends meet. And like, I'm screaming at it. And like, I'm only talking about from the area I'm studying, which would be like the amphibians and reptiles, but you notice as well the collapse in insect life, which is causing, directly affecting like the populations of lizards and frogs that we have in this country. It all connects. I mean, people can say you're making up, but when you're on the cold front, there is no shilling. There is just the facts.
Now, you've said your own back garden, although quite small, you have, and this is what I want to get across to people, you have actually made it a biodiverse back garden with amphibious creatures living in it.
Yeah.
How?
Okay, so I dug it up and I have 4 ponds now at the moment, which consists of either, there's a big, large pond, then there's a bit of decking, then I have a half a barrel that I sank into the ground, then I have a raised pond, an area that used to be a flower bed. Mm. So it's just water water and plenty of green and cover. And the bugs come in and the frogs come in and they never leave. And that's, it's as simple as that. It's just basically creating your own wetlands is the key, and just giving it up to it, letting it do its thing. Here's another thing. It looks great. It looks very pretty.
That's what I'm wondering about.
It's a bit wild, but people love it because it's just, it's slightly overgrown. I leave it that way. Now, if it gets mental, I'll trim it. But for the most part, it's on its own. And it's amazing. My kids got to grow up with nature in a house in the state in Talla. My neighbours, kids got to grow up with nature because the frogs kept jumping over the wall.
We were laughing downstairs about the fact that you have a sulcata and this entire
that's a tortoise. Yeah, for people who aren't in
the entire operation we started here was the tortoise shack was born from my sulcata.
Yeah,
but the fun part about it was. On either side, as you know, they'd wander around and just eat. So on either side of me, none of the neighbours ever used any treatments on their lawns or anything like that, because they would literally say to me, Tony, would you want to drop the tortoise in for a little while?
And he'd go around and just munch everything.
There wouldn't be a dandelion left in the area, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose the point I'm making is that it changed behaviours, just a thing like that on a block of houses here, and it changed it back to the point where the odd time someone was doing something, I'd be looking out the back and I could see over the wall someone dumping their grass and there's them over going, I'll just throw it over there because I know Tony doesn't care, and the tortoise is going to wander out now and just chow down.
Like in our neighbourhood now, we have the kids on the road during breeding season because the frogs disperse. They could go up to like 5 and 6 kilometres away from the breeding ponds, so they're all over people's gardens. People have stopped using slug pellets on the road. People have the kids go out during springtime and do a little frog patrol where they'll go around with buckets and bring the frogs back up to me so I can put them in so they can do their breeding, because some of them can't get over walls and stuff. They check the drains for them. It's magic, and you know, and I'll give him a fiver or whatever just to say thanks very much. But it's a real kind of, it's like a community event now.
Hang on, Martin was interested. A fiver, you say?
I was thinking, is that fair frog? Yeah, that's fair frog.
Oh no, Jesus, no! I'd be gone. I'd be broke.
Are there any other little hidden gems in Talla? Like that was a hidden gem in Talla.
Dodder Valley is a beautiful spot. I mean, like, I'd be down there, I drop a line for fishing sometimes, and I'd just sit there just to relax. The odd time I get off, and like you'd see birds of prey, kingfishers, otters. The whole greenway along there is really, really beautiful. And again, you walk down into it and you could be anywhere. You can't hear the roads, you know, it all it needs is a bit of aesthetics, because a lot of people have dumped there over the years.
Yeah.
But during the summer months, the grass and the flowers get so big and tall, see anything.
It becomes a butterfly meadow.
It's beautiful. And to credit South Dublin County Council, especially the Heritage and Biodiversity Department, they made a massive effort this year with the pollinator plan ran by which had been devised by my colleague Jane Stout in Trinity. They made a massive effort with letting fields go wild. And it was very heartwarming when you're getting the 77A up to Green Hills Road and you look out over the once barren green fields, and then you see this multitude of wildflowers that weren't planted. They just let the grass grow and they just came. And it was amazing to see. And like, this is what's so frustrating about this whole incident and on a national level again. This is what is frustrating about it, because there are steps being made that are very positive and really good for our environment and our biodiversity. But it seems that then you get something like this that happens. It seems to like fly in the face of it and take 3 steps back.
Well, I'd be more harsher than you. I'd say there's a lot of great ideas in mitigation plans and in climate action plans, and there's a lot less implementation.
Yes.
And you know, and I still see it, and very much I see it in Talca Valley, where the nature has bounced back along the river. Like you were saying, you'll see birds of prey, you will see kingfishers, you will see otters in the canal for the first time in bloody 20 years I'm seeing these things. And then they come and then they drive through it with this monstrous, it's almost like a combine harvester.
Oh yeah. And they just chop it up. Yeah.
And they just boom, and you're going, oh my God, it's, yeah. And it's all manicured again. And it's grand because I'm going for a run. It's nice and smooth, but it's not what you want.
Yeah. I mean, like it's best practice again. It's
what we always did.
What we've always done. Who is doing the environmental impact reports on these things? Where's the ecologist who signed off on it? Because that's what we need. Yeah. Because no ecologist would, not anybody worth their salt. They'll say, wait till winter. Chop it all down when there's no life around.
Yeah.
Get rid of it then. Let it grow up during the summer. Let it go mad.
Yeah.
And people will have to put up with it. People get used to it very quickly. In England, they're getting used to the long grasses and the verges. And
well, I see more of it here. There's a lot more of it here.
If you explain to people, Martin, that we're talking about flood defences. Oh, by the way, natural flood defences are when you have the
soakage. Yeah.
Yeah, something's going to take that runoff. It's not just going to flow down. All of those things. If you explain to people, and again, for the bean counters, that this actually helps us in our failing quest to do something about our carbon emissions, because we don't, we're facing huge fines, hundreds of millions in fines for not meeting our climate reduction targets. If we had any, and sorry to balls this up, listeners, but it's very easy to say that if you see how something like the Tallow Wetlands can be done successfully in the space of 18 months, you know, these things can be done rapidly, not because we're great at it, but because nature bounces back.
Yeah, and I mean, like, my thing is I want them to, I don't want, there's a lot of people calling for it. I don't want anyone getting sacked over this. Mm. It's obviously a miscommunication. I cannot see anyone being that malicious to go in and do something like that. What I think needs to be done, it needs to be restored. And if they were to do that in the next couple of months over the winter, the seed bank is there that was left from the plants that are already there. The insect life and the eggs are still under that sludge. Mm. Take it off, and I guarantee you within 2 years I could bring you up there and you wouldn't notice the difference. There probably would be a drop in frogs and newts because a fair few of them would have gotten squished.
Yeah.
But they'll bounce back as well if given the habitat back.
Yeah.
Now, whether South Dublin County Council are going to do that, I don't know. They might be forced to do that, I don't know. But I, if I were them from the get-go, I would have said, put their hands up and said, okay, there's been some mistake. We'll have a chat with whoever and then we'll see what we can do.
The first statement was really bad.
It was just a word salad. Mm. It was a word salad of hodgepodge nonsense. I felt like going up and mortared. I didn't know. I was like, what are you talking about?
But we are very slow in this country to move. I mean, you look at Africa and you look how many trees got planted in one day.
Yeah, that's right.
In one day.
But they have the Sahara bearing down on them and they're going to lose it.
But I mean, how many trees in one day? It was incredible. And you look at Ireland and you think we need so many diverse habitats in Ireland. We are a monoculture with the spruce. Our forests, they aren't somewhere where you go and take the kids for a camping trip. They are literally for commercial purposes only.
Well, the best of what's left is if you go down to Glengariff, you know, the Cork area, because let's tell the truth here, because they could never just deforest them to make money because it was too hard to get to the bloody things. And that's
partially,
a lot of them survived because of that, you know.
The distance.
Yeah,
look, we need a national plan, a new national plan on how to treat existing wilderness and how to expand them. Simple as that.
And actually, you said it yourself, and when you're doing normal plans that aren't about that, you need an ecologist to throw an eye over it.
100%. Linking up greenways. Yeah. All the places that we have, existing public parks we have should be linked with greenways.
Yeah.
And linked with ponds, forested areas, so animals can freely move. Because we have frogs in certain parks in Dublin that are banjo players because they're inbred to bits. So you know what I mean?
I'm looking at Martin now and I can just see him playing the fat frog song.
But you know what I mean? And you're getting albino frogs, purely albino frog and leucistic because their gene flow has been so poor, which is why we were doing this project in the first place. We were going to link the 500 breeding adults that we recorded up there down to Time and Park onto Bushy.
Yeah.
Easily done if you just give them the way to move. But, you know, we do need a national plan. We need, and again, it's not that hard to do. And it needs to be implemented. And we need to implement all the other plans that we have in the pipeline that are waiting.
I'm reminded of when we, Martin, do you remember when we interviewed Susie Byrne and she had talked about being appointed to one of the committees for some of this with the state, that they should almost do this disability check legislation. You know, so they'd have this plan and they'd say like that and she'd go, I don't know what that does for someone who's in a wheelchair, you know, or whatever. And when it was sitting around at the transport committee and she talks to them, you know, you do need, I also reminded of the 2040 plan when the government first launched. The sustainability was added a few months later when they panicked and realised it hadn't actually, it was becoming an electoral issue. So, you know, you need those things built in. And as you said, some of our plans aren't that bad actually.
They're not. And I mean, There's housing estates being, like, I mean, here Rackcool, just outside Dublin, there's another housing estate going in on top of a forest, which is on council land, which has been let grow over 35 years. So it's rewilded itself. They want to put in 250 houses over, and that means every forest or every tree in the place will be gone within 10 metres either side of a river. So it's a couple, it's nearly 10,000 trees. Beside the place that's rewilded is empty fields of whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't
which could
make sense.
It makes no sense. It's been there for 25 years. I know we have a housing crisis. Everybody in the neighbourhood, and I've been contacted about it, everybody in the neighbourhood is saying, listen, we don't mind people having it, but why are they knocking down the trees? Why don't they put it in, buy Farmer Hoggett's land off him, who'd be probably delighted to sell
12 it. 12 grand an acre, yeah.
100%. He'd take it, no problem. And put it in. But instead, again, it's this attitude. Like, if they're going to be like that, they should maintain their lands and not let them get wild.
Can
and
I blow one myth though, just on the we do need houses, absolutely, but when the state control enough land within Dublin alone to build 144,000 homes, that's a myth. We have enough land.
I'll bow to your superior knowledge on this, because like, it's not my thing, but I believe it.
But that's it. So we have it either in either state owned or state controlled. That's what they have. So there's no need to be afraid of saying we need more land for green land.
It's so much more valuable. Yeah. It's so valuable to have places like this. So valuable. I mean, like, the fact that it exists in the first place is a minor miracle. Just because, again, it was left alone. Second of all, if they're going to go in there and flatten it, are they going to get any an environmental impact report? Are they going to have people on site who are scientists who are able to say what animals are there? I'm telling you now, they'll be out there with security on site to make sure nobody gets in to check it. Probably more so now after the Tala incident, because people have a taste for it now. And this is another thing they do. They tend to do projects in three places at once within each council to try and
split
any arguments. And I've seen it now with a lot of people supporting each other's protests and supporting each other with our groups. And I think that's what needs to happen. You need to fight for these little spaces we have left, for every leaf and every snail that's on the ground there. We need to, as communities, step up and go, no. As you said, we realise that housing is an important issue. Of course it is. But also, our planet, our countryside, our heritage, our wildlife, that's all as important to us. Otherwise, you have green fields of empty nothing and it helps no one. You'll have, instead of having badgers and foxes, you're going to have burnt out fiestas. And who wants that? You know what I mean?
I have to say, I was lucky enough to grow up in a place where there was a little copse right across the road. I grew up out in Portmarnock and the beach was there in front of us. And as kids, we had those miles and miles of dunes with all the diversity you could think of in them, little forests. It's all a golf club now. And you think of what the kids out there now don't have compared to what we did have. But I can't let you go without asking you about the big question of the day. Wolves.
Ah, yes. I have a colleague, Holly English, who studies wolves. So you should really get her on to have
a chat.
With her.
Yeah.
She's fucking brilliant, she is. But I mean, look, from my point of view, the more wildlife we have, especially if you have a big predator like that, that means you have to build up. And I see where Eamon Ryan's coming on. He's basically saying they're building it from the top down. So if you have a big predator like that and you need space for them, you need to have a really healthy ecosystem to support them.
That's right.
And we had it. We had it in this country up until 200 years ago.
Yeah,
1876.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So I was recently at the opening of the new wolves I was invited to the opening of the new wolves enclosure in Dublin Zoo. Yeah. And there was a guy talking there about it. And it was fascinating actually to see how close a couple of generations ago we had them running around in our hills. But we need to start. It's a good idea to try and start managing our lands better for wildlife. I think personally, we need to mature and change our attitudes from this is the way we've always done it in this country towards nature, because we can't keep seagulls alive in this country.
Yes.
We can't keep hen harries alive in this country. We can't keep the curlew
alive. Yeah.
We can't keep we're barely hanging on with some of our amphibians. It's purely down to bad land management, bad agricultural practices, because that's the way we've always done. We've always put out poison for, despite the scientific evidence saying that foxes aren't killing it. Well, I was told that. Hmm. You know what I mean? And if we could
actually support wolves, it would mean we're doing something
right. It would mean that we. Yeah. Yeah,
and I mean, like, look at Spain.
It,
yeah. The Iberian wolf is right along Spain and into Portugal and Italy as well, and Romania. And I've been to a few places where I've seen wolves in the wild, and they're doing okay. They're not. Massive numbers or anything, but they're there.
Yeah. They're also very shy creatures. They're not going to be.
Yeah, of course.
You're not going to see one walking down O'Connell Street.
Hopefully not.
Well, now, I did see a fox cross over and jump into the back of the Garden Remembrance the other day.
There's foxes all over town. I'll tell you that from working in Trinity. Yeah. Again, nature's very adaptable, and some animals are always going to do well next to us.
The fox is very adaptable.
Very adaptable. But I think the wolf idea is certainly good for a national debate.
Yeah.
Mainly, I think what we'll do is open up our attitude towards an honest discussion about our attitude towards nature. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people in cities drinking their coffees and pints in bars going, that's a fantastic idea. And down in the pub, in the local, the lads are pulling their hair out going, my feckin' sheep are going to get munched.
Yeah.
So it's good that we have this discussion.
Well, I could actually see wolves in Kenmare. I could see wolves down around there. I could definitely see that it would work.
Places like the national parks.
Phoenix Park, because they have to cull the deer.
Where's Ruthie Fizz and her idea to release bears?
Bears into the woods, yeah. She's a gas ticket, she is. Look at our mountains that we have, our hillsides that are bleak and desolate and are just burnt. Every so often, imagine looking up to the Dublin Hills and seeing a deciduous native forest and thinking there's a family of five wolves up there.
You could put
and
the
hearing
kids,
them at night. Mm. It'd be amazing.
You could put the kids on the train at it's finished school on a Friday at 3 o'clock, straight onto the train, up the mountains with a tent, and spend the whole weekend up there with the kids. And it would be brilliant.
Trying to survive.
Yeah. Well, regardless of wolves up there. But I mean, like, it does make me sad. The more you know about a lot of issues, I suppose, the more heartbreaking it can be. But especially when it comes to the natural world, the more, you know, you learn about it, and the more you mature and you find out, my God, I always thought Ireland is a green and pleasant place. It's robbing the English phrase, but a beautiful green land full of, you know, nature and all. And then you realise that, no, it's a green desert.
Deforested country in Europe.
In Europe. It's a green desert. Mm. And when you tell your friends, like, I've good friends who I'd have an appointment with, and I try and explain that. I say, listen, they'd have a bit of land, you should put some trees there in a pond. Why? All the animals love it. The rabbits love it and all. And I explain about that's just them and the grass and that's it.
That's it.
And then when they understand that kind of thing, you see the attitude change. I never thought of it as being a green desert.
Think of a lawn as a desert.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden your ideas change.
You change. And then you think of it when you're driving to Ireland and you're like, oh my God. Yeah. And as the hedgerows decrease, we don't even have those, which are essentially little mini forests within those green deserts to give animals places to stay, if that makes sense.
Yes.
They kind of replaced the old
the oasis.
Yeah, they were exactly. And as they get taken down, so farmers can have these big prairie-like American cultures. I don't want that in Ireland. I don't want to be driving for hours and hours and not even seeing a hedgerow.
Well, when you consider that the Shannon has flooded, is majorly flooded this last 4 weeks because there is nothing to stop the water from coming out.
A colleague of mine, is Killian Murphy, is down in there. He's down doing some survey work in a local farm in Kildare, and they have left a certain area that would have flooded massively. They've left it go to woodland, and he's down there and he's showing me some photographs, and you can just see the water stopping right at the woodland because all the roots and the stumps and everything is just, and he's saying, now there you go, isn't that amazing? And he, like, again, just for him to see that in the field, it's amazing. And again, nature-based solutions are the way to go. We need to just change our attitude and start working with nature as opposed to flattening.
Well, thanks very much for coming in and having a chat with us, Colly.
It's been
interesting, and it's one we could go on for a while. I've loads of other stuff I could ask you.
I'll come back.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really great to have that chat. Thank you very much for coming in.
I appreciate
us.
Do check out Colly's podcast at the Critter Shed, and you'll see him on Twitter. And I'm very grateful for the work that you've done. And we do think that, you know, whether your bee pollinator packs out, or you're leaving your grass, and you're doing it correctly. There's a lot of things we can do ourselves, but that's, you know, lads, just think about it beyond as think of your grass, your grass lawn as a desert. That'll change things.
Yeah. Okay, bit of housekeeping, folks. We need patrons. Okay, we need them. There's no question about it. We absolutely need them. Please come onto our website, www.tortoiseshack.ie. Sign up to Patreon. We also have a live show coming up, and tickets are in short supply. You'll find the details again on our website. Go in there, book yourself a ticket quick before they're all gone. It's going to be a great live show.
Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye bye.